Sacramento.
Glory, glory, Sacramento. Glory, glory, Sacramento. The Republic marches on.
Roro with the goal.
Roro's going to take a shot. Oh, my, do you believe it?
Cameron Nwassa charging forward, looking for a team to strike on distance, and it rattles in! Cameron Nwassa, the Sacramento King!
That it was less about if and more about when Sacramento was going to join Major League Soccer. Well, folks, when is today? Your when has arrived.
All right, everyone, we are here going to do some review of some games and a preview of a playoff game, but because of the uniqueness that is this episode, the specialness that is this episode, it's pertinent that we do a little intro. So if you're hearing my voice for the first time, hello, my name is Scott. I am one of the co-hosts of the 916 Republic podcast. I've been following the team as a fan since the end of the 2014 season. And we've had our podcast for a little over a year and a half now. So it's been an interesting ride, and I'm super excited to be with my co-host, Zach. Zach, do you want to tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Zach Winnick. I have been a fan of the Sac Republic as long as Scott. Scott actually invited me to my first game, and he was like, yo, man, there's this cool new soccer team in Sacramento, and they're playing a preseason game. Let's go watch. And we go to the second division, well, third division at the time. Third division U.S. soccer game in a 20,000 seat arena, and it's packed. And I think honestly, since then we were hooked. We had season tickets, you know, maybe a month later. And we just, you know, we needed an outlet. We needed a source for all of our, I don't know, Sac Republic stuff going on in our head. So we're like, let's start a podcast. Nolan, another one of our co-hosts, and Scott started a podcast, and I came on quickly thereafter. And yeah, it's been great ever since.
And if you are listening on the Rise of the Republic feed, you're like, what about our guy? So Rich, how about you tell a little bit about yourself to the 916 Republic people?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what's happening, everyone? To the people in my feed, don't worry, I am here. And to the people who have never heard of me, listen, I'm okay. I'm an all right guy. Don't worry about it. I'll fit right in here. Yeah, we got a lot of crossover synergy happening today. Really excited about it. Unfortunately, my co-host is out dealing with some personal stuff, so we thought we would collaborate on one. And yeah, man, I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, and if there's one thing Rich is definitely better at than me, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but it's at growing a beard.
I was going to say, are you really going to give this to
large? Him? Well, I mean, my beard does get big, but I don't keep it that big. So yeah. You have to give credit to the guy who has the bigger beard. So Richard, you're already a better man than I am.
They're both an 11 out of 10 beards. Okay. As an outside party, I will tell you, the listener,
an outside party that great has beards. Zero facial hair.
It is.
None whatsoever. I couldn't even if I tried. Sorry, Rich.
I'm going quantity, I'd say, and maybe Scott's going quality. We both deserve some accolades here. I will say to anyone just to get to know me real quick, I do write for the Sacramento Bee. I've been covering the Sacramento Kings for a while, but I mean, listen, you know, when Sacramento Republic was announced to be joining the MLS, I need to get on board as soon as possible. I am a little bit of a novice in talking soccer, but not a novice in sports in general, and I'm certainly like giving it all that I've got to get caught up. Watched every game this year, and I think I am coming along pretty well in my understanding. So, you know, I'll leave the highly technical stuff to you guys, but I certainly am a hot take merchant, so I'll have some thoughts.
Yes, that's good. And I do have to say, when Rich says that he's picking it up pretty well, that's not just him talking. He and I, and you know, all the other co-hosts and stuff that are at games and stuff, you know, we'll talk during halftime or water breaks or whatever. And Rich does know soccer more, I think, than he gives himself credit for.
Agreed.
So, well, with that being said, let's kick off our quicker review of Tacoma. Okay. We'll spend a little bit more time on Portland because it's just going to be more important going forward. But we do need to talk about the Tacoma game this past Wednesday for a little bit. I'm going to give the lineup, and then I'm going to turn it over to Rich to give his first point, and then Zach and I will kind of discuss it off of that. So here's the lineup, okay? In goal was Brady Scott. From left to right on the back line was Asher Pollan, Sargis Mahoney, Gomez. And then your midfielders were Villarreal, Roro, Juaregui. And then your forwards were Lopez, Chavez, and Iwasa. Not necessarily in that order, but that was about the formation. So, Rich. Yes, this is clearly our starting 11. No. Rich, what did you pick up from this game?
Yeah, so, okay, I don't want to, you know, I said I was a hot take merchant, and I was going to kind of try to build to that slowly. I wanted to come in here with some pretty pedestrian commentary and then maybe build to some bigger takes as the episode went on, but you're teeing me up here for a Galaxy Brain take right away, and I'm going to let it fly. I think, so obviously – you mentioned a bunch of kids in this lineup. The academy guys, Panagos is a, you know, first teamer now, but he came on late. I mean, you've got your, I think all your 18-year-olds except for the goalkeeper Ramos, one out there, all the teenagers, I should say. My Galaxy Brain take here is that Briggs was okay with losing this game, not only for the potential of, you know, look, we, you know, to sacrifice a potential result for experience for the young guys, but also something that I've been saying on our pod, Rise of the Republic, for a long time is that this team actually should lose a game, probably needs to lose a game, because I've been concerned with complacency from this squad all season. And I'm like, they keep kind of playing poorly and getting away with a draw or even a win. And, you know, taking a loss in this game, I actually kind of, my Galaxy Brain take here is that Briggs thought, you know, if we lose this, it's not the worst thing.
No, I would agree. And I think Briggs, looking at the remainder of the schedule, looking at our potential for a first place, for a first seed in our group, as just being, you know, not it's not going to happen. Reno has not lost a game. Reno has not conceded a single point all year to a team outside of Sacramento. So I think you're right. I think he walked into this game going, look, it's just not going to happen. Reno's not going to lose the game. They ended up tying, which was, it got close. But I think Briggs, yeah, he went into it like, we are set. We're the second seed here. And we'll take that and we'll give some minutes to some young kids.
Yeah. And just really quickly, the match that that we were kind of following along with on Wednesday, other than the Republic game, was the Reno and Vegas game. And I'm looking at, you know, Vegas this season and thinking like they just got screwed because of the group they're in. They're actually not a bad team. They're not good, but they're not bad. So I think at the end of this season, I feel like we make fun of at least a Vegas a lot on our show.
Outside the pitch. We make fun of Vegas.
Just really quickly, I just have to say, like, Vegas, you kind of got screwed because of COVID. I get it. It sucks. You're going to come back next year and really make some waves. And I'm looking forward to playing Vegas.
The money drops.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to playing Vegas. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
But for this game, Rich, I get what you're saying with, like, this team. For this team, a loss would have kind of maybe kicked them into high gear and been like, oh, okay, like we need to actually, come out guns blazing. I get that. And I when I first heard you say that on your show, I was kind of like, I just disagree. Like I think it's more beneficial to win a game than to lose a game, even though it's not really going to affect the standings. And I think, in my head, I was thinking that the starters are playing. If the starters play well and we win, then that is good. That, like, that generates, you know, positive energy heading into the playoffs. But then when we come into the Wednesday game and we see the lineup, and Zach and I's immediate thoughts were, Briggs doesn't care about this game.
Yeah.
But then I'm tweeting out as we're following the Reno-Vegas game, like, oh, dude, Vegas might pull this off. And like, I was tweeting out like, dude, this is going to be embarrassing. Like if the Republic throw out this lineup and they lose or draw, but then Reno loses and like it could have set up a Saturday close to the regular season where Sac Republic could have taken the first place in the West, or not in the West, in their group. Like in my head, I was thinking like, this was a bad decision. This was bad. But then afterward, as I was kind of thinking about it, I came more around to the idea that this was probably smart. You play Wednesday and then Saturday. You give rest to a ton of your guys. I think with the exception of Roro and Villarreal, everyone else, I think, got rest. So that's good. And also, I just had in the back of my head, and Rich, I kind of want to get your thoughts on this too, because you've been following basketball for a very long time, and I want to know if this happens in basketball. But I got this little bit of sense of Briggs maybe saying to these backups, like, hey, this is kind of your shot to impress me going in for next year. Like, you know, your role on this team is kind of set for this season, but show me something that makes me want to keep you on the team. Now, maybe he didn't say that directly to them, but Rich, do you think that maybe that played a little bit into all of the squad rotation and everything we saw on Wednesday?
Yeah, I do. I think that there was a lot of diplomacy and a lot of long-term thinking in Briggs's lineup here and also in the next game, which we'll get to in a minute. But I think this was deeply strategic from him. I think he is, you know, first of all, you've mentioned before, like getting Brady Scott potentially, you know, contractually agreed to starts. That could have been the deal there. That could also have been the deal. I think you mentioned with, you know, perhaps a guy like Dekel Keenan, maybe getting him a couple starts in the end of the season here. But yeah, not only that, like in the NBA, I wouldn't say it happens that much because you are, it's such an elite league that you're, I guess you establish your value in a really thorough way throughout 82 games and in the G League and all these different ways. But with a team that is, you know, these guys just aren't paid like NBA players. So I can definitely see the need to, these are a lot short of contracts normally, you know, some prove it games I think is totally fine. Like to give, you have a chance for guys that are maybe on the cusp of retiring. You know, we know that Rafael Diaz considered retirement at one point. So especially with COVID and especially with everything going on, to really like let a guy know if, you know, do I want to be at this team, or to let the team know, do we want to continue to commit to this player? I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's crazy at all. And then one other thing that, you know, Briggs mentioned after Saturday's game is he's trying to get everyone their form, their legs underneath them. You know, he wants to have options. So across the last two games, you know, he started, I don't know, 18 guys or something like that, you know, 18 different guys. He wants to have options.
Yeah, and that was exactly what Zach and I were just kind of like looking at each other. As soon as you said that, we both shook our heads like, yeah, that's...
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's exactly right in terms of if there's an injury and you have to put Cam in, I mean, you want Cam to not have his only minutes be, you know, 10 minutes here as a substitute or 15 minutes there. You want to give him a good run out. And to be fair, Cam didn't look particularly great, but he didn't look poor. He didn't look any worse than Frank Lopez, who missed a few shots. So, I mean, honestly, I think this was a very smart move. Zach, I kind of want to go to you. Was there any player that stood out? Was there any moment in the game that stood out? Obviously, you could talk about the goal. What stood out to you other than the lineup about this game?
Well, I think Brady Scott in this, it was a 1-0 game. Okay, there's not a whole lot of positive talking points for the Republic. But I thought Brady Scott played well, and even Frankie Lopez. There was some runs of play where I remember thinking to myself, okay, like the kid's got he's got a high motor, and he puts himself in decent positions a lot of time. If he's able to finish, he could be a really good substitute for us going into playoffs. So I think those two players in particular played well. I thought the midfielders were okay. You know, I thought They moved the ball somewhat well. Andrew Wheeler Aminu came on. He looked a little rusty, but he's been out for a while. So it was good to see him get minutes for kind of, you know, that point you just made of getting people legs, you know, getting their legs under them, getting them minutes. So yeah, I would say Brady Scott, Frankie Lopez, and it was good to see Andrew Wheeler Aminu back on the pitch.
Yeah. And I think for me, I would say it was good to see the kids get out there. Did they do anything that'll wow you? Probably not, but it was good to see that Sacramento has this option to play academy kids when they're trying to rotate their squad. I think we can start to wrap up this conversation, but I want to end with Rich and just say, you know, Rich, was there anything that stood out to you in this game? Anything you want to talk about before we move on to Portland?
Yeah, my last kind of question to you guys, or my last comment on this game, I do want to talk a little bit more about Frankie Lopez. He did get all 90, I think, in this one. And I am not convinced that he did much with it. And I also just want to mention, I think Zach just referred to him as a kid. I did not know he's 33.
when I said kid, I was like, oh, this man's way older than me. Why did I say kid?
But no, like, I mean, he does have a lot of gas. Like, you know what I mean? Like he really does for a 33-year-old. I did not know he was 33 until recently.
Are you talking about Frank Lopez or Roro Lopez?
Frankie. They're both 33.
Really? I'm looking up his stuff right now, and he says it's 25.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong about that. I'll double check, but I'm going off the team's roster webpage.
Oh, really? Okay, we're going off like a third-party app that says he's 25, so I don't know. Maybe we'll tweet about it. We'll say that.
The unknown.
Yeah, the
age
unknown
of Frankie Lopez.
So it says May 10th, 1987 on the website, on the Republic website. Oh, you know what? That's the exact same birthday they have listed for Rodrigo Lopez. So that's they got their Lopez's conflated.
COVID. That's a COVID casualty. That's what
I bet you Frankie's 25.
Yeah, probably.
Then I think you're right.
He's not really a kid. He's like a... We're like brothers. We could be brothers.
Yeah. I have to send an email to my editor quick.
Okay, so what was your question again, Rich, to us about Frank Lopez?
I mean, did he show you anything really that makes you want to include him in the playoff sort of like plans? I don't know. I just, there was a shot he had like on the ground from outside of the box. There was that other one where he missed the goal face entirely, but you could argue maybe he's trying to find a runner there. I don't know. I just wasn't really impressed, honestly.
So Nolan was really excited when he saw Frank Lopez in the starting 11 because he just had a little few minute monologue about how he really wanted to see Lopez get some minutes. I leaned more toward your assessment that he was good, but at the end of the day, the chances that he created, the shots that he took didn't result in anything. They didn't inspire me. It wasn't like it wasn't like he took a shot that forced this wonder save, or he had some really good link up play or anything like that. It was good, but ultimately I just don't think he showed me anything that forces me to think about, oh wow, I need to really consider this guy as a super impact sub coming off the bench. Zach,
he's no Enov Olsen. That's for sure.
Oh, and I got a little something about Enovolting coming up.
Right, so then I'll keep it.
I definitely agree with you, and I think Zach does too. And unfortunately, I think Nolan probably does as well.
Yeah, reluctantly. Sorry, Nolan. Yes.
All right. Well, if that's it, we can move on to Portland. Rich, I don't want to leave you out because I know you said you had a couple things. So anything else before Tacoma, before we move on to Portland?
The Frankie thing was the main question I had. We can talk about him a little bit in the next one as well. So he got some minutes there, but I think we've covered it.
Yeah. And just really quickly, in case you missed it, it was a 1-0 loss for Sacramento against Tacoma. Decent little finish, I'll say, by the Tacoma forward who's scored like 5 or 6 goals against us now. Anyway, I don't want to talk about him anymore. Yeah. Okay. Portland Timbers 2. I'm rubbing my hands. I'm smiling very big because this was a fun game to watch.
It was all fun
at the stadium. There was family members. There was, I think, maybe a couple of like academy coaches or academy kids.
It was two academy teams.
Yeah, because it was the most full the stadium
had
been. It was fun to hear.
those people there. So really quickly, we're going to do the same thing. I'll name the lineup, and then I'll turn it over to Rich for his first kind of talking point. So the lineup is Rafa Diaz in goal. Possible team MVP, question mark? Okay. Ooh. Barahona, left to right for your back line. Barahona, Dekel, Tomas, Hilliard, Arce, McCrary. It's your back four. Your midfielders were Villarreal, AWO, and Roro at the 10, which is something I know Richard probably has to talk about. And then left to right, your front line is Formella, Belmar, and Bijev. So, Rich, we were at this game. We saw these goals. We were inspired by this team. What's the first thing that you just have to talk about? What's your first takeaway from this game?
Honestly, I'm so torn. There is so much to dig into here. I could put it off, but I do want to start with Diaz just because you mentioned possible MVP there. Little preview for anyone that happens to be reading my piece in the B tomorrow, coming out Tuesday. I gave out a bunch of season awards, and I did choose Diaz as MVP. Ooh. And I have to just say, I mean, this was a really, really, really impressive game, right? I mean, like, I think it was originally put at an 8-save night, but I think it only ended up at 7 on the final score sheet. But a 7-save clean sheet, I mean, how incredible has Rafa been?
To say that he has surprised me is an understatement. I remember the four games that he got last season after Cohen left, and before Bobby Shuttleworth got here. And then I think he got even like one game after Bobby Shuttleworth was here, and it was good, but it was kind of the Frankie thing where it was like, yeah, he was good, but he didn't do anything that makes me want to talk about him. This season's just been the opposite since, Grinwis went down. Rafa Diaz has been great. And I was thinking about it yesterday morning, just as I was kind of pulling together my thoughts for this show. And Rafa Diaz has just been looked over, really, by Sacramento, I think, not too often, but he's just been looked over. He's brought in to back up Josh Cohen. You can't be mad that Josh Cohen was starting over him because Josh Cohen's just a really good goalie.
Yep.
But then Josh Cohen moves on, and you think like, okay, this is Diaz's time, mm-hmm. right? They're going to roll with him. Nope, they bring in an MLS veteran goalie in Bobby Shuttleworth, who played well.
Yeah, who played well.
And then this season, you think, okay, it's now Rafa's time. He's got to be the incumbent. Nope, they bring in another MLS guy and Adam Grinwis. Well, Grinwis goes down, and he finally gets his shot at the starting spot, and then they bring in Brady Scott, and I was kind of scratching my head, not from the why loan in a guy, because we kind of figured that they would loan in a guy, but I thought that they would really, just from their track record, the team's track record, bring in a goalie with more experience, someone that would probably play over Rafa. But honestly, Rafa Diaz in those three or four games played so well that I think Briggs and Dunavant and just the coaching staff said, we don't really need a starting goalie, we just need someone to back him up.
Yeah.
And since then, since he's taken the gloves, he's been electric. There's maybe been the odd mistake, but it's not even coming to my brain what that mistake could be. Zach, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. If you remember a year ago during that window where Rafa was starting after Josh Cohen had left, I was a big proponent for keeping Rafa in that as our starter. I really liked what I've seen. I'd seen from him. I think, to be fair, looking back, his ball handling and his passing mm-hmm. was the weakness. That was the weak point. I think I've seen that. That's definitely grown and gotten better this year. There, I think if I'm like being very critical, there's still room to grow in those areas for him, but he's definitely grown. He's shown a lot of talent this year. It's just been cool. It's been cool to see him. I asked about this in the post-match with him because we got to interview in the post-match. He's just had to be so patient for so long, and he's seen so many people, so many great goalies, really. Some great goalies. I mean, Josh Cohen is just played Tottenham, just started for Maccabi Haifa and play Tottenham like last week. He's learned under some great goalies, and I'm so glad to see him in this position. And in my opinion, it's been a long time coming. So, as far as MVP goes, I don't know that I've given this enough thought, I guess, to like confidently be like, yes, Raf is the man. But he's certainly in the conversation.
Rich, did you have anything else to add about Rafa Diaz, or do you want to save that for your article tomorrow?
I'll just throw out there that he finished the season with a 77.8 save percentage, which is the second best in the entire USL among goalies that actually like played more than a game or two.
Stella.
Yeah, and I remember going back to Josh Cohen, I think, finished like second in the save percentage for his like really good year with Sacramento the full season. And the guy that won it over him like played the minimum amount of games required, which I think was like 20. But it just irked me that like Josh Cohen played almost double the amount of games. So I don't know. I would have to look up who the guy that is ahead of Diaz with the save percentage over him. That's probably where the Golden Glove is going to go. But I mean, Rafa Diaz, defender of the year for Sacramento, I think it's really between him and McCrary. And I genuinely don't think that MVP is out of the realm of possibility for Rafa Diaz. So, Zach, did you?
I'm going to jump in real quick. I'm sorry to cut you guys off. I'm going to jump in to answer that question that it's Kempin of San Diego Loyal who actually played in one more game than Rafa and does have an 83.8% save rate, which is absurd.
Dang.
So fair play to him.
Such a good team.
Well, and I'm surprised it was him. Well, as soon as you said that, I was like, yes, it is Kempin. But he was actually, he got hurt at the beginning of the year, and it looked like he was going to be out. But I think he only ended up missing like two games and came back like three or four. Like I remember watching the game and being like, oh, Kempin's out. That's not good for them. But good for Kempin. You really can't be mad that Rafa Diaz didn't get it if a guy has an 83 point whatever percent.
Yeah, that's
percentage.
Absurd.
Like, that's just crazy.
That team is so good.
Yeah, San Diego is really good. And we can talk more about San Diego later. But I want to go back to Zach. Zach, did you have any talking points from this game? What was the thing that stood out to you?
Yeah, I'll take a goal. I'll take one of the four. 4-0 win for us. I'll take a goal that I thought really showed at least kind of a big picture, like a really big picture kind of positive. It was the second goal scored by Darius Formella. This is a long ball that finds Belmar. Belmar does a great job of heading this ball forward, making a great turn, showing both of his power, his height advantage, his athleticism, making a great run, a great pass to Roro at the top of the 18. And then Roro finds good vision, finds Formella to the left of the goal in the box, and Formella slots home a great goal. That's the kind of play, like in this game against Portland are not a good team. Some of these goals are not goals that are going to get scored against Phoenix. That type of goal can. It showed a lot of talent and a lot of good play from our key players. And I think moving forward, as we look towards the playoff, we look towards Phoenix, that's the type of stuff that needs to happen. We need Belmar to be that big, strong, athletic guy holding up play, moving forward, finding good passes, laying it off to somebody like Roro who has vision, and finding Formella. Formella is the guy with the hot boot right now. Finding him in the box is going to lead to good things. So that second goal really stood out to me in this game in particular. What about you, Rich?
Yeah, that goal was phenomenal. Belmar has a habit of doing that where he can kind of physically dominate a defender. He did it, I think was the Tacoma game, not the away game, but the most recent Tacoma home game, where he just sized up this like 17-year-old defender and is like, oh, I'm bigger, I'm stronger, I'm just going to pass it to myself. I'm just going to put this into space, and I'm going to like beat him in a sprint and then use my body to get him out of the way. That is, it's so impressive. And it's something that I don't think anyone else on the team really has, that combination of physical ability that he does. And I think that he's so locked in as the nine going forward at this point. I don't think that he can be shifted out of that spot. And then this goal like also highlights, you guys that I've been on this rower at the 10 thing for a minute. He did make the right pass there to Formella. And I don't know that, say they did that funky thing where they stick like a Wasa at the 10 or even Bijev at the 10. This just felt like the right play from him. And it just cemented my belief that Roro can play that spot.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Actually, to be fair, I think if that ball finds Bijev and Bijev is playing the 10 in that circumstance, Bijev looks to take that shot. I think that's what he'd probably do. And he wouldn't look to Formella on that left. So yeah, I think that's a good point. And also, I mean, with Belmar too, is like, we've talked a little bit about this on here, is Belmar's not an amazing finisher. He's just not. He really isn't. But we don't need him to be that amazing finisher. We need him to be this. This is what we need. And this is what we got. And this is what needs to happen come Phoenix this weekend.
Yeah. And I think the thing really that sticks out to me from this goal is the pace of play. Rich, I kind of want to hear thoughts about the little comment I'm about to say, because it feels like this whole season things have the pace of play has been fairly slow. It's a lot of not 1-2 touches. It's a lot of 3-4-5-6-7 touches, and then a pass is made. But this, it was like Belmar heads it over the defender who's behind him, gets on the ball, turns, looks, plays the pass to the top of the 18. Roro takes a touch and then curves this like chipped ball kind of around the back of the oncoming fullback that's trying to mark him. And the fullback trying to mark Roro should have been marking Formella. Formella's wide open, takes a touch, and slots this goal, not to the top right corner, but like kind of upper half. Yeah.
It was
like,
nice.
Gets it over the reach of the goalie's hand. And it was all 1-2 touches. That's what sticks out to me. But Rich, in your first year really watching the Sacramento Republic like consistently, do you think I'm right? Does this play feel like it develops faster than the rest of the season? Do you think I'm off? What do you think?
No, I think you're definitely right. I think this team, from my understanding, you're right, this is my first year really watching the team closely, but from my understanding, it's kind of always been their thing, is like defense and building out of the back and, you know, making sure that they're not letting in goals, and then, you know, they'll win a 1-0 game, like they're fine with that. This didn't really feel like that team. This felt like a team that has been motivated and been, you know, credit to Briggs. I would imagine a lot of this goes to him for getting this team some urgency. I think that they've kind of, you know, I really don't know how to explain all the first 5 minute goals conceded. I really don't know how to explain how that's happened so frequently. But the only thing I can really, you know, point to is just a lack of urgency, where it's like, all right, we're going to build slowly and like find our moments, where this one is like, Briggs is probably screaming at these guys, like, go bring me a goal. Like right now, I want a goal right now, you know, go get me that goal.
Yeah. I can't agree with you more with like, I don't know how to explain the goals in the first 5 minutes. And honestly, if things fall differently, there could have been so many more games that looked like this game with Sacramento scoring in the first 5 minutes. Like I was looking at the stats and they had 6 shots total, 4 shots on target in the first half, 4 goals. Like that's pretty crazy. But if this is a lot of other games and, you know, things just fall the, you know, few inches differently or whatever, Sacramento could easily have flipped the script where they're the ones scoring first, and they're the ones that are controlling the play. So I really don't know how to explain those first 5 minute goals. And then when you contrast it with this game where we scored three goals in the first 10 minutes, yeah. I mean, it's an insane, like it feels like such a stark difference compared to the rest of the season, but really it's not like the team did anything different. It was just the goals. They actually scored them this time.
Yeah. They scored two in the first five.
Yeah. Formella scored two in the first five. So I did have a quick point here that I wanted to bring up, and that was Andrew Wheeler-Aminu. Like we said, he looked a little rusty on the way back to being fully fit, but I think this game he played pretty well. He did what he needed to do, and he'll probably, if Skundrick is healthy, he'll probably be on the bench, but I don't know. I'm kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on what that looks like, and I kind of want to see what you think, Rich. Do you think Andrew Wheeler-Aminu made a good case to be in the starting 11 next week, or do you think he maybe is the first one out for Skundrick?
Yeah, I really liked him back in March in that opening game against Tulsa, but then. Too. Yeah, you know, but he dealt with some injury stuff. He, you know, and frankly, the midfield is just really deep, and it's hard to break in.
Yeah, and COVID. Yeah,
yeah. I would say personally that I don't have a need for him to be in the 11. I even think he might be like my fifth midfielder right now. Like I would probably, if it were up to me, which it's obviously not, I'd have Villarreal easily over him. I'd have Skundrick over him, and obviously Roro over him as well, and you know, borderline Bijev over him, considering that he is in form. You know, I'm not the biggest Bijev fan in the world. I think if you give me an entire season, who would I rather have? Give me AWO there. But for a game in the playoffs, you need goals. I he's probably out of it for me.
Yeah, I would agree. But at least talking with this, like from this game, I thought he offered what Drew offers, is that high motor, covers a lot of ground, and he seemed to be a little more crisp in passing. So that was good. That was good to see. Hopefully we can make a deep run. You're going to need players off the bench. There might be a reason why we would need him. So that's good. But yeah, I would agree with Rich. And I hope, yeah, Skundrick is back to kind of take back that role as the number six for us.
Rich, anything else to add about this Portland Timbers 2 game before we move on?
Yeah, I want to get you guys' impressions of the center back stuff that we've seen. We have seen like a tremendous amount of rotation there over the last three games now. I think it's been three different pairings with a lot of Dekel mixed in. The return of Tomas Hilliard-Arce, that was the pair on this night. Sargis, you know, by the way, can I just give a quick shout out to the 17-year-old, now 18-year-old Sargis for leading the entire team in minutes played this season? That's ridiculous. But yeah, like I wonder, I mean, it's not, I think you guys, I'll ask the question to you, but, you know, I mean, Scott, do you think that Sargis is just not in this center back pairing going into the playoffs?
Okay, I'm super glad you brought this up, because if you didn't, I was going to. Like, I have some thoughts about this. I was talking with Matt George, who I know you know from KCK Sports Radio, and he was basically saying that he just didn't feel like Sargis the past couple games played well. And going into the playoffs, you need your center backs to be playing well. They can't be doing the things like we saw Sargis do when he came on as a substitute against Portland. He gave the ball away. He wasn't communicating super well from what I saw. Like, nothing stood out to me that he was, you know, really communicating a lot. And we've seen him make a couple of defensive lapses. So I don't know how training went, but I definitely think that Briggs was saying, hey, son, you know what? You've had a great season. As you said, Rich, he is leading the team in minutes played, but it's we just need something a bit more consistent. So here comes Dekle Keenan and Tomas Hilliard-Arce, which, I mean, we can say that they're good, they're bad, they have good qualities, they have bad qualities, but they get it done here against Portland. And
man, they have experience.
Yeah, and I'm thinking forward, maybe I'm skipping ahead too much to the preview against Phoenix, but I feel much more comfortable with Dekle and Tomas than Sargis in for one of them. And it's not just because of defensive lapses or losing the ball because he's too aggressive with his passing, but it's more because that these two guys are really good in the air, and against a Phoenix team that is good with set pieces, has a big, strong center forward,
Rufat Dadashov.
You want your center backs to be able to bang some shoulders and throw some elbows. Not so Dekle. Much that you get carded, Dekle, but like you want some guys that aren't going to be afraid. And I think getting, what did he start, 15 games, Sargis? I think those 15 games were great for his development. And it's now time to say, okay, it's the playoffs. We need our best guys. And you're not on form right now. But Zach, what did you thought? You were just saying that you got something.
Yeah, I want Sargis. I want to sit here and say, yes, it should be Sargis. But because he offers so much upside, you know, those long balls. We've seen him on multiple occasions this year create major scoring chances that have multiple times led to goals because of his leg and his ability to create a great, exceptional, accurate long ball. But he has struggled, and he's 18, and that's not surprising. So if we play Phoenix this weekend and Dekle and Tomas Hilliard-Arce are our center backs, I wouldn't be surprised and I wouldn't be upset about it. I want Sargis to be there, but I understand if he's not.
What about you, Rich? Anything else to add?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you guys. You know, it's funny we haven't talked about Mahoney, but that is fait accompli at this point. Like he made too many mistakes late in the season. I think he's out of it. But yeah, and I guess we are transitioning a bit into the preview for Phoenix. But just in general, if you're talking about who's going to start there in any playoff game against any team, you do need like actual defenders there. And Sargis isn't like a bad, well, he's a good, he's not, I mean, the value that he brings.
He's just young.
He is young.
He's developing.
But his best traits are not, or it's because he's so skillful in things that aren't traditional. He has superfluous skills, or however you say it. He has skills that are not
big enough for
expected
Nolan.
Expected
in the big words department.
I blew it. I fumbled the bag on that one.
You're good.
But like, you know what I mean? Like Dekle and Tomas they don't have any special skills outside of the standard set of skills you want from a center back. Sargis has those things, but they're more sturdy in those expected areas. They're definitely stronger. They're definitely bigger. They're definitely angrier and meaner. Definitely better in the air. I spoke with Tomas one-on-one after practice one day, and I was talking to him about Skundrich, and the two of them were co-captains at Stanford together. And he mentioned that like Skundrich was like the diplomat and Tomas was like, it was kind of a good cop, bad cop thing with them. And Tomas is like a very fiery dude. He is very loud. He's very willing to scream at his teammates if they're making a mistake. You know, Tomas told me he's hitting the smelling salts and he's slapping himself in the face before games, running into walls, preparing himself for hits because he's going to take them in just a minute. It's not that I'm in no way calling Sargis soft, but any 18-year-old is going to be soft compared to Dekle Keenan and Tomas Hilliard-Arce.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's almost like in in, I don't know, maybe 2 years, we'll look at Hayden Sargis and go, okay, this guy not only has the experience, but he's got the defensive skills necessary to be successful at a high level. And he's got something a little bit more than that. Like his passing is next level, or, you know, maybe he's versatile. Maybe he can play center back. Maybe he also can play left back, stuff like that. Like he's just not the finished product yet. And he doesn't have anything to fall back on, like just superior positioning or whatever, because he doesn't have that experience yet. He needs to just be given the opportunity to continue growing. And again, fair credit to the coaching staff. They rode with Sargis through the ups and downs this year. That's what you have to do when you develop a young player. But you don't want to ride the ups and downs when you're in the playoffs. So I really don't see this as like a huge negative. It was almost maybe to be expected. Like you just need to go with the guys that you trust. And if you don't 100% trust Sargis to not make a mistake, then you just got to put him on the bench and say, hey, bud, you're going to get 25 starts next season and you're going to progress so much. It's just not these games right now for you. Nothing bad. That's football. That's life. That's sport. Anything else to add, Rich, before we move on?
On this game, I think I'm good. I got a couple questions for when we get into the preview.
Yeah, Zach, you're good as well?
Yeah, let's get to Phoenix.
All right, Phoenix. Phoenix Rising FC. Guys, do we need to talk about the Wednesday game between Phoenix and San Diego briefly before we go into a preview of this? Or are we just going to tell people that they can look up the news on that and fill themselves in? What do you think, Rich?
I think you guys did a pretty good job covering it in your last episode. So anyone that's listening to the Rise of the Republic stream can check out that one. And we probably don't need to dissect it too much, but yeah.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I'll say very quickly is Junior Flemings is on administrative leave as well as the head coach, but I don't think that's as big of a deal, but there will be probably no Junior Flemings for this game, which is very good for Sacramento. Okay. Yeah. So I've got some things to say. I know Zach's got some things to say. I want to start with you, Rich, as we wrap up this show, as we talk about Phoenix. What do you think is just one of the things that you need to bring up with previewing the Phoenix Rising?
So real quick, do we know that administrative leave is extending through the weekend?
Yeah, I don't. That's why I was like, he'll probably be suspended or on administrative leave. I just really can't see Phoenix being like, okay, we're going to put you on administrative leave for one game, but then when it comes really important, we'll bring you back. Like, that's just a terrible optic.
It's not a good look.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. It's second division soccer in the U.S. Yeah, we'll see. It's a crazy world we live in. Anything can happen. I'm not ruling it out, but if I had to put odds on it,
tells you.
My gut says he probably won't be there.
Man, yeah. I would like to know before I fully, I guess, commit to understanding, like, how big. I mean, that's a big deal. Like, you know, Junior Flemings, he's going to win the Golden Boot. He's probably the best goal scorer. I mean, that's debatable, I suppose, but certainly in terms of his production, been the best goal scorer in the entire USL this season. I mean, this team is stacked. Like, they have the reigning MVP in Solomon Asante. This team is incredibly stacked going forward. But the one thing I'll point out, and I pointed it out on Twitter on match night, is that, you know, we may be catching them at their worst. They stumbled through a few games. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, this whole controversy that's going on, you may be catching them at the best time to catch them.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. If you look at Phoenix's games this season, there have only been two teams that have really caused them trouble. You could say a third with Vegas. There was a 3-3 draw with Vegas, but Phoenix was up 3-1 and then just kind of collapsed in the last 10 minutes of, it was really extra time. There was like 10 minutes of extra time and they collapsed. But there have been really two teams that have given Phoenix trouble. The first is Orange County. Orange County has beaten them 1-0, has drawn 1-1, and then Phoenix has beaten Orange County 1-0. That does not sound like Phoenix Rising games. That shows me that Orange County was able to do something to disrupt Phoenix. And if you were so inclined, go back and watch some of those games, because I'm sure there's going to be something there that will stick out, that will be important for Sacramento to try to mimic this upcoming game. And then the second team is actually San Diego. San Diego beat Phoenix 3-2 with a first half hat trick from Rubio Rubin a few weeks ago. And then before they forfeited this match on Wednesday, San Diego were up.
They were up 3-0 until the 45th minute.
Yeah, they're up 3-0. I think it was 2-0, and then Phoenix scored, and then San Diego added a third.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But still, they were up 3-1 at half. So whatever San Diego was doing, definitely Sacramento needs to do. And I was kind of looking at those stats, and they had a ton of possession in the first half. They had a decent amount of shots and a lot of shots on target. And they honestly, they just didn't let Phoenix get into a groove. Yeah. When Phoenix did get into a groove, they scored.
Yeah.
So it's kind of getting a little bit ahead of my thoughts, but I think one of the things Sacramento has to do in terms of preventing Phoenix from scoring is breaking up play. You can't let them get into a passing rhythm. You can't just sit back and expect Phoenix to not be able to create anything, because they will.
Yeah.
So you have to break up those patterns of play. Zach, you have something to add?
Yeah. Well, and what often gets them into that rhythm is capitalizing on your mistakes. That's what they love to do. They love to counter, and they love to capitalize on your mistakes. They have the talent in which they can do that. They can sit back and wait for those moments, and that's what they can have initiate that rhythm. And that's what often happens. That's how they score a lot of goals, because they have players that are so talented to where you make a mistake, all right, we're going to put together a string of great passes and get to the side of the 18 and cross the ball in up top to Dadashov, or cross the ball in low, far post to Flemings. Like, or if that's not there, Solomon Asante, the league MVP from last year, is going to take you one-on-one and put a great shot on net. So for us moving forward this weekend, we have to eliminate those mistakes, which is, it has come and gone in this year for Sacramento. We've had games where we've played crisp and we've played well, and we've seen that from, especially from our midfielders, from Skundrick, from Jaime, initiate such good passing sequences and have games be crisp, and have our number nine hold up play, Belmar hold up play well and distribute well and not make mistakes. That needs to happen this weekend. We have to limit our mistakes, because they will capitalize and they will counter on those. And if you allow them to do that, they have the talent to put balls away quickly.
Yeah, so I said break up their play. Zach is saying that Sacramento needs to limit their mistakes. Rich, what do you think needs to happen for Sacramento to be successful this weekend?
So I can't put myself where you guys are at as far as any analytics here. I have never watched a Phoenix Rising game. So I'm going to have to fully defer and listen to you guys as far as a strategy standpoint. But I can look at numbers, and I will point out just that it's kind of echoing what I said before, but just to point out that over their first 12 games, they outscored opponents 38-10. And in their last four, it's been 8-7. So basically an even margin. So you're going from, you know, an expected or an average 3-1 win to basically a 2-2 draw. So, you know, I don't have anything tactical to give you. My only point here is that I think if you go in believing that you can win, if you carry on the momentum that's been built up here from a mildly embarrassing loss to Tacoma, and then a really emphatic win at home in what I really feel was a dress rehearsal for the type of mindset that this team is going to take into the playoffs, and perhaps a dress rehearsal in terms of the lineup in a lot of ways. You know, if this team thinks that they smell blood in the water and they think that they're catching Phoenix at a low point and can go out there and stay engaged early or start engaged and stay engaged. If they steal this game, you know, maybe they get to go to Reno. It's a team that they know that they can beat, and they know that they can beat them in Reno. So I think as far as, you know, where the heads of these Republic players are at, like, it's probably a really good spot, honestly.
Yeah, well, no, I think you're 100% right. They're probably looking at Reno, or not Reno, probably looking at Phoenix and going, this is a team we can beat. I remember even Briggs saying in a post-match, this was maybe a month ago, that, you know, there's no one in this league that scares him. There's no team in this league that scares him. Every team, he thinks, with the squad he has, they're beatable. So I think, honestly, Sacramento did exactly what you were saying, Rich. They had the mentality of, let's show Reno what they're in for. Let's show both Reno and Phoenix what they're in for.
Yeah.
Let's show Phoenix that if you don't capitalize on your chances, you're gonna be in a deficit, because we will capitalize on our chances. We're not just gonna score a goal early. We're gonna score three goals early. Are you ready for that? Are you up for that, Phoenix? Because not only are you in a little bit of a slump, but like, people don't like you right now. Like, you don't even have your own fans on your side right now because of the events of this past week. Yeah. So I really think that Sacramento is in, as you were saying, Rich, like, the mental state to just destroy Phoenix. And I don't necessarily mean like they're going to score five goals. What I'm saying is, I think most people would look at Phoenix versus Sacramento and go, yeah, Sacramento's good, but Phoenix is better, and Phoenix will probably win 9 times out of 10. I really think Sacramento is going to surprise them with how competitive this game is going to be. And Rich, I know you were saying you don't watch the game, but imagine how Sacramento plays, right? You have this very, you know, counter-pressing type of system. So, you know, Sacramento throws a lot of guys very high defensively to try to win the ball back very high. Imagine that style of play versus a team that is very good at passing, just little passes, pass, 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 pass. That's Phoenix. So you have this team that wants to force you into mistakes up the field in Sacramento, and then you have a team in Phoenix that says, our players are just better than yours, and we can just play around you like you're not even there, like you're just a traffic cone, and we're just at practice. These are two very interesting styles of play. And when we, in the past, when we see teams that are very good at passing face teams that are very good at pressing, there's never a like, oh, this game ended 1-1. It's like, oh, the team that was pressing, they scored four goals, because the team that was trying to pass, they just couldn't do anything. Or it's the opposite. It's the team that was passing was just so good at passing that no amount of defensive pressure could faze them, and they were able to score four goals. That's kind of what I see happening, is one of these teams is going to have to switch to plan B. Whoever has the better, more rehearsed plan B, I think, is going to be the team that's successful. So for Sacramento, what happens when you're in possession? Who's able to do something magical that, you know, if Phoenix sits back a little bit, who's able to unlock that defense? Is it Roro? Is it Formella? Is it Bijev? Is it maybe Werner off the bench? Who's able to do something magical to create that goal? Or for Phoenix, if Sacramento, you know, comes out and really presses you, do you have a plan B? Is it playing long balls over the top to Solomon Asante? Is it getting Dadashov way more involved than normal and having him drop much deeper and receive passes and be a bit more of a creator? Is it something where maybe you press Sacramento and you make them uncomfortable defensively and you win the ball high up the field? Whoever has a better plan B is probably going to be the team that wins this game, because Sacramento's identity, I feel like, is so clear, and so is Phoenix's, that teams are going to be, they're going to be very well prepared for each other. And that goes, I think, to what the mentality that Rich was talking about was like, if Sacramento's mentality is like, dude, no matter what comes at us, we're not going to be phased. We know what plan A, what plan B, what plan C, and what plan D is, and we can execute them effectively. And I think the last thing I'll say before I kind of turn this over to Zach to talk about something that he wants to see from this game is Briggs is implementing a system with half a season before playoffs.
Like, not even really.
Like, think about how well this team would be clicking if there was another 16 games to go, another 18 games to go, because that's what it would be. We've only played half of a regular season, and it feels like it just happened on Saturday that there was a complete game from start to finish. Sacramento dominated offensively. They dominated defensively. Portland could do nothing. Just imagine if this was a regular season, the next half of the season with Sacramento clicking, firing on all cylinders. That's, I think, the Sacramento that we're going to see on Saturday. We're going to see a team that wants to show everyone that they're not the other good team in Group A. They're not Reno, and then there's Sacramento, and then everyone else. They want to show the league, I think, that they deserved to be in the conversation with the best teams in the league, and that it wasn't a fluke that they beat Reno twice, and it's not going to be a fluke that they beat Reno at home or Phoenix at home. It's not going to be a fluke that then when they go back to Reno, probably in round two of the playoffs, that they beat them again. I think that's the mentality that this team has. And I think that's what Rich is talking about, but I've been talking for a while. So
no, Zach, good.
Do you have anything else to add for this preview?
Well put. If I could just get a little bit more practical on what I want to see, because I think what you said it was great. Three things. Center backs, if the center backs are competent, they don't need to be amazing. If the center backs are competent, if the midfielders distribute well and limit mistakes, and Belmar holds up play well and distributes well, we will win this game. Those are the three things I need to see. We have a goalie that'll bail us out. We have great fullbacks. We have Formella that's got a hot boot. If those three things happen, I think the other pieces will fall into play and we will come out with a win. What about you, Rich?
I think you really hit the nail on the head with the center backs. I think that surprisingly, like, this game might be determined by Declan Keenan and Tomas Lyarse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the outcome of this season might be determined by these guys. And it is not great. I will just say, like, my confidence is not amazing. Like, Declan Keenan is what, 30, 35, 36? Like, that man is very slow.
Yeah. And Tomas Lyarse is not much faster.
His hips are a nightmare.
His hips?
His
footwork, Tomas, your hips.
His hips and his feet are nightmarish at times. He cannot.
Oh yeah, for sure.
He takes five steps like when one step is needed. He chops his feet so badly. If one ball gets stuck under his feet, like, that could be a goal. And I think an early goal, that could be the end of the game. Like,
yeah,
a mentality break there. So I think it's going to be on Villarreal and Skundrich or Willer Aminu, whoever is, you know, healthy or whatever, good to go there, to come back and receive easy passes from them. I do not want those guys making difficult passes. You know, and Barahona and McCrary as well. There were some communication errors on Saturday from them just getting the ball out, you know, into the wings or to the midfielders. That's going to be a key. I think they're going to need to, like, really protect those two. And then, yeah, I mean, obviously what it's going to come down to ultimately at the end of the day is, will our guys, the Republic guys, will they actually finish? Like, will they actually finish? I think that those are the two keys. Formella is so streaky. Werner has been – his conversion rate is minuscule, microscopic this year. Belmar, I don't think he's gotten a goal in free play. Like, right, like, he's only had that one penalty. I don't know that our odds are amazing, but if those two things happen, if Dekel and Tomas Lyarse don't let the ball get caught under their feet, and if Formella and Werner and Belmar can actually put shots on target and not directly in the goalkeeper's hands, then, yeah, you could win.
Yeah, so defensively, these were kind of my notes. They have 43 goals this season, 10 from set pieces, which is a lot, 5 penalties, which is a decent amount, 28 from open play. Of those open play goals, I went back and watched every highlight from every game, and I counted Fleming's having 11 goals, Dadashov had 6, Solomon Asante had 5, and then there were 6 others. Fleming's isn't there. So you're missing a quarter of your goals this season. Like that's
from
gone.
Open play. Yeah.
From the season. A quarter of your goals. I mean, they scored 43. He has 14. That's like a quarter of your goals. So how are you going to limit Dadashov? Big center backs. Okay, you're taking care of that. How are you going to limit Solomon Asante? Because he's going to be going up against Juan Barahona, who gets forward very well. So you can't get caught out in transition because Solomon Asante will rip you up. That's number one. Number two, they love a low far post cross. So you have to mark your man. You can't have a Reno situation where there's two guys on the far post completely unmarked. You can't have that. They will destroy you. You have to mark your man all the way across the face of goal. So whether it's Dadashov, whether it's Asante, it doesn't matter. You have to put a guy on them. And then set pieces. Like I says, just said, they can score a lot from set pieces, corners, free kicks, whatever. You have to, again, mark your man on set pieces. You can't give them an inch. And then lastly, for Sacramento, how are you going to score? I think we've talked about it. You have to have that something special, like Thomas Edvoldsen against New Mexico last year has a truly amazing goal. Deep, deep cross from Sam Werner. Edvoldsen takes it out of the air, volley, puts it near post. I mean, that's the type of goal we're going to need from one of our amazing attackers.
Yeah, it's playoffs. Yeah. Everybody's looking for that.
You need
and
that.
We need it too.
And then lastly for Sacramento, you're going to have to capitalize on your set pieces. So you're going to need Dekel or Tomas Hilliard-Arce to get ahead on something. You're going to need Roro and Barahona to have amazing service the whole game. You're going to need somebody to be scrappy. You're going to need Belmar or Formella or someone to just get in there and pick up a loose ball and put it on frame hard. You're going to need that. It's not just as simple as don't make mistakes. You need something special. You need to capitalize on every chance you have, because if you don't, this team will beat you. So with that, we are just about done, I think. Nothing else from Zach. He's giving me the thumbs up.
The good old thumbs up.
Yep. What about you, Rich? Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
That's it, man. Thanks so much for doing this crossover with me. I think it's going to be, I think the people will love it.
Yeah. And of course, we just want to say again, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with, Blake, there you go. Your co-host as he's dealing with some family stuff. You know, hopefully he's able to catch this game and, hopefully sometime in the off season, we'll be able to,
do it again.
Do it again. Yeah,
absolutely. Sounds great, guys.
Rich, would you like to join us in the 916 Republic sign off?
No. I guess we could. I don't know.
We should.
I listen to your guys' pod every week. Why do I not know what this is?
Oh, all we say is glory, glory, Sacramento.
So okay. Scott will say glory, glory, and once he's done, we'll all three go Sacramento.
Okay. That's also the intro, is it not?
Yeah, it kind of is.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right. I got you. Bookends here. I got it. All right, yeah. Hit me.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, as always, glory, glory,
Sacramento. Hey, you were close.
Yeah, you were close. Yeah.
A+.